Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning. This is Tracy Hales with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM, KSJE.com in Farmington, New Mexico. Today, I'm talking with Mickey Pettit about her award-winning book, A Kiss for Maggie Moore. Mickey won the second runner-up for the Fantastic Zia Award through New Mexico Press Women.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning,
nice
Mickey.
To hear you.
You too.
Good morning.
And you are in Texas right now?
I am. I'm in Houston, Texas.
Houston. Well, but you're a New Mexican at heart, aren't you?
I'm a New Mexican at heart, a Westerner in heart also.
Good deal.
Yes, lived in New Mexico most of my life, moved there when I was 6 years old from Wyoming. And so I consider myself a dual citizen of New Mexico and Wyoming. And, oh, by the way, I live in Texas.
Right. I think it's interesting that you set A Kiss for Maggie Moore in Wyoming.
You know, I did that because when I started the book, it was when in a period of time when she was younger,
mm-hmm.
and my life began in Wyoming, and my teen years were more spent in the Farmington area.
Oh, interesting.
And so I actually started the book when I was driving. I used to like to do road trips on my own with my dogs,
mm-hmm.
and I was driving back to Wyoming to see my grandmother, and I make up songs when I, on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out about the song I was making a song of.
Oh.
And that sort of was the seed to this. And it was in Wyoming. And so that's one of the reasons why it's set there, too.
Ah, I love that. Because our protagonist, Maggie, is a singer.
Yes.
Yeah, how about that?
Yes, and she had considerably more lyrics in the book, but that's one thing you learn as a writer, that you cannot put lyrics in books. So,
yes, I understand. Well, before we get along further, why don't you give a brief synopsis to our listeners so they know what we're talking about?
Okay. Well, this is it's a love triangle between three best friends who are coming of age,
mm-hmm.
in their small town Wyoming neighborhood, and set in the late 1960s and the early 70s. The first part of the book is set when the kids are that coming of age, 12-ish, and the second part of the book is set when they are their senior year of high school. And so it's the relationship of these three best friends. There is Maggie, who is the person who tells the story. There is Bucky, who is, they're all neighbors,
mm-hmm.
and there is Melinda. They do everything together. And they have quite the neighborhood of about seven houses in this neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
that are very instrumental in their molding.
The characters are great. I really like the neighborhood and the neighbors and the neighbors' dogs.
Yeah, thank you. I had so much fun on that in creating these neighbors. That's also another reason of why it's set in Wyoming, because I did have a neighborhood like that, but I moved very young when I was 6 years old. But I always romanticized that neighborhood in my mind.
Ah.
The clubhouse that we
right.
had there, the tree house we had there. You know, at that age when you can just walk around anywhere and everybody watched after you and it didn't matter. You could be gone all the time. And
right.
Parents didn't care because there was always somebody there to look after you.
Mm-hmm.
Although I had that, too, when I moved into New Mexico, but the neighborhoods were different in New Mexico where I lived because the houses were closer together.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Maggie's neighborhood, the houses are a little bit further apart from each other, but it's still a very unique neighborhood, and they all look after each other, and they're all they're with each other from Maggie's inner formative years. That's what she has.
Mm-hmm. What I was going to say was it reminded me of my growing up. And those young years with the big lawns and playing the games in the dark, and the parents would rather see you go outside than worry about you being out there.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But when it was time to come in, as with Maggie's father, or not with Maggie, but with Bucky's father, Big Buck.
Big Buck.
My father would always do this whistle that you would come running when it was time to have you in the house. You heard the whistle and you came. No questions asked.
Right. It was time.
But yes, everybody stayed outside until it was dark and you had to come on.
And it's also played against the backdrop of the Vietnam War, which affects Maggie's big brother. I don't want to give anything away, but that's definitely an aspect of his growth.
Yes. And the interesting thing about being a, I'm a mid-boomer.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a mid-boomer, so I was 12 years old when all of the, I was 12 years old in 1968. And so I'm still, and Maggie and the children there, Maggie and Bucky and Melinda, are still at that play stage during
right.
this time of when things are changing. It's the brothers and sisters that bring you in to make you realize
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
life is different.
Right.
Than what your playground is, because you really don't live outside of that playground, and particularly in the 60s in a small town, because you didn't know much other out on the outside world. You just
right.
had your television set, and that was about it,
mm-hmm.
and your National Geographic magazine.
Right. The National Geographic. This is so true.
So it's an interesting time for 12-year-olds in 1968, because they got one foot in the world is changing door, not only of because you know they're going through that age change themselves, they're 12 years old becoming a teenager, but also because society is doing this huge shift.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not on one world or the other yet.
Right. And they're as they grow up, their life is so much different than their parents.
So much different than their parents, and I would say it's even different than their siblings who are about 4 years older than them.
Right. I agree. Yeah, it just captured me and took me back to growing up and the little crises and turmoil and some of the... I had a crazy neighbor like, what was her, Rebecca? Yeah.
Rebecca Frick?
Yes. She was definitely a different character. I really liked her, too.
Rebecca Frick was so much fun to write.
I bet.
I didn't want to make her a caricature.
Right.
But she was, she's jaded.
Mm-hmm.
She's rough. She's wise. She is kind of like a horse that's been ridden hard.
Right.
But just wise. And Maggie loves that about her.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think that Maggie will become closer to Rebecca than... I actually think I'm closer to Rebecca.
I can see it. Yes.
I don't smoke, but...
Oh, and she did. Boy.
Oh, yes. Yes. But she was so much fun to write for because you could just put her jadedness, could just put a nice twist on the world, on reality, and an honesty. So that's what
right.
I like about Rebecca, too.
Yes.
She's very honest.
Right. And
that's what Maggie likes about her, too.
Right, exactly.
Her honesty. Maggie appreciates that.
And she, they elicit her help when they have tough questions they need answered.
Yes. And then I also like Doc Sim. Because I actually, yes, I like Dr. Sims because he represents kind of he's the cautious type, the, follow the rule type. But yet he's not a, and you know, not follow the rule. Things need to be done the way they should be done type.
Right.
The worrier type.
Right.
He's going to worry that the fireworks, somebody's going to mishandle fireworks. He's going to worry about, and he's right.
He is right.
Because he's a doctor, and he sees these things happen.
Right. But he's still very loving.
Yeah.
I
wonder what happens to Patricia.
Right, me too. So this story evolved for you as you wrote it, or did you know the whole thing before you wrote it, or how did that work?
Well, like I said, I started it off with a song, and all I knew in the song, I was doing it like a melody. And I just ended it with Bucky, Melinda, and me. I have no idea where those words came, but it fit within this song. And so I thought about, oh, wow, this friendship of these three people, but one's going to be unrequited love. So when I really seriously started down to write it, I knew how it was going to end, which is how the book begins, which is how it ends, right?
Right, right.
At the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
At the wedding. So I had the ending, but what I didn't know was how do they get to the ending? And so I started writing the first section, which was set in there, and just doing a series of stories of what life was like for mm-hmm. these kids growing up and the different things that would happen to them, incidents or troubles they'd get into.
Right, right.
That's it, the trouble they would get into.
Right.
And so I got to the point where I was so glad to be out in 1968, And then I just added started working on the second half, which came to me that, oh, I need to not end this book in the six with them being 12-year-olds. I need to end it closer to the age of the marriage
mm-hmm.
or the wedding. And so then I started on the second half of the book, which is when they're in their high school. And that's where I really used Farmington. Because, the parades, the most mm-hmm. the homecoming,
mm-hmm.
And the F by the side of the hill, which is obviously a B in the book, because they're the Broncos, not Farmington High School. But, so much of that came from there. And then, so I had the book pretty much finished. It kind of evolved afterwards of how do I get to this end?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I know the end. How do I get there? And that evolved. And it took a long time because I had twins in between them.
Oh, geez.
And
yeah, wow.
So I would write whenever I could. And then sometimes, months would go by without writing. And maybe a year or two.
Well, with twins, yeah, I can understand.
And then you go back to it and when it was actually a gift to have had children while I was writing this, because it made me, after you've had kids, you write differently than you were writing before, because you see things over again, new eyes. So that was nice to have that. Yeah, so I had my twins while I would write when I would take them out to the playground or something like that, and I'd write in my book.
I'd love to hear you read something from this, A Kiss from Maggie Moore.
Okay, I will do this. Oh, I'll do a little Rebecca Frick for us.
Oh, okay, good.
Draped in a beach towel, Patricia Sims sat next to her mom, hugging her own knees. Jen budged since arriving. Something looked different about her, but I couldn't put my finger on it. In mid-July, she'd gone away to camp somewhere back east and had just gotten back. Tired of being the only girl in a boy-infested pool, I figured she should share mommy duty. Hey, Patricia, come on in. The water's fine. Go on, honey, nudged Mrs. Sims. Get in the pool. Patricia reluctantly stood. After handing her towel to her mom, she twinkle-toed up the stairs to the pool's decking. Holy schmoly! She had the same freckled face, the same uncontrollable red hair coaxed into a shoulder-length flip, and the same cat-eye glasses framing her squinty blue eyes. But what happened from the neck down? What happened to the pudgy part of her? She was a couple of inches taller and maybe more than a few pounds lighter. Patricia didn't look 14 or even 15 or 16. Standing before us in a pink polka-dotted two-piece was a stunning young woman, lean but well endowed. Janu Padilla's tongue was practically hanging out. Patricia's been to a fatty farm, Randy Sims' voice rang out. Mom! Patricia screamed in horror, only to fly off the stairs, grab her towel, and storm into the house. Mrs. Sims shrugged her shoulders in apology, then took off after her. Lucky swam beside me. Maybe you better see if she's all right. I sighed. Normally, this would have been Melinda's duty. Handing Bart over to Buffy, I got out of the pool. After wrapping a towel around my little girl body, I went in to see if there was anything I could do. Patricia sat at the kitchen table crying. Not having much luck consoling her, Mrs. Sims waved me over. I'll just go outside and see if her father needs anything, she said, giving Patricia a peck on the forehead. Not sure how to cheer her up, I jumped in with a small talk. So how is camp? You mean the fatty farm? There really is such a thing? Patricia could tell I was honestly unaware. Sure, Camp Stanley. Patricia had found out about Camp Stanley from an advertisement in the back of her Heartthrobs comic book. She had showed it to her mom, who showed it to the doc, who had been concerned about his daughter's weight gain and lack of self-control. Her sudden display of self-initiative set Doc in motion. After placing the necessary calls and being satisfied with the program's reputation and results, he signed her up. Well, I guess it wasn't too bad, although you wouldn't have liked it, she told me, and nobody would have liked you. I mean, you being so skinny and all. I didn't know if I should be insulted. There was horseback riding, badminton, fencing, she continued. I even got pretty good at basketball. Bet you never thought that would happen. When it came to shooting hoops, Patricia was one of the few neighborhood kids I could beat. It was kind of nice not being the heaviest girl for once. Patricia diverted her eyes to the soon-to-be-devoured chocolate birthday cakes on the counter. It kept us really busy, so we wouldn't have time to think about, you know, food. Did they starve you? I asked. Oh, no, we got to eat pretty much everything that I eat at home, just a lot less of it. I've got more clothes to give away now if you want them. Nothing fits anymore. Rebecca Frick teetered in with an umbrella drink in one hand and a bottle of rum in the other. Mind if I join you? She asked as she set them both on the table. I'm quite sure your conversation is more interesting than that political gab fest out there. Rebecca flipped aside the skirt of her full-length Nehru cover-up that didn't to straddle the chair beside me, leaving her bikini's strategically placed flower petals exposed. A cigarette dangled from her lip as she emptied the remainder of the rum into her drink while giving Patricia the once-over. You seem to have grown up this summer. Rebecca had always scared the hell out of Patricia. Panic-stricken, she opened her mouth, but nothing came out. Well, that happens, Rebecca continued, sometimes a little too fast. She removed the umbrella from her glass and took a drink, but not before offering Patricia and me a sip. We both declined. I was about your age when I blossomed. If I only knew the things then that I know now. Rebecca handed me the umbrella, then indicated for us to move in closer, as if she had something very important to say. You are going to have all sorts of rascals sniffing around. Go ahead. Let them have a little whiff, but just a little. Oh, they'll want to get their noses right up in there and take in all that fresh, young sweetness you have to give. But then they'll leave you stinky. And believe me, it takes a long time to wash that stinky off. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, we echoed. No, ma'am, she protested. You just wait until you can fully appreciate the aroma of love. Satisfied with herself, Rebecca downed the rest of her drink, then left us to contemplate our fate and the odors we might unknowingly be emitting.
That is so great. You really put a voice on Rebecca there. That was perfect. I love it. We know where this ends because it's ending at the beginning, etc. Are we going to see any of these characters again?
Well, I might do a another book that I would love to find out what happens to Maggie in the 80s. And the 80s yeah. would be so much fun to write about.
They really would. And I would like to see that, too.
And so, yes, I am contemplating that. I have another book in the work right now.
Okay.
It's called String of Pearls.
Oh.
And it's two women at different stages of entanglement with the same man.
Oh.
One's about to divorce him and the other's going to be his wife. So, yeah, so I have that in the works. And then I think I may have to go back to Maggie. We'll have to see.
I keep thinking about her since I finished the book, going, well, I wonder what's going to happen with her.
Did you like it?
I loved it very much. Oh. Yes. And I really felt for them, all of them, really.
Oh, good. Well, that's what, you know, it is so what's so wonderful. It's scary to have your babies out there, but they're out there. And,
right.
Like my kids, too. But it's just so wonderful to know your characters. Every time somebody reads them, they become alive again.
They do. Absolutely. But you've done really well with this. You won the Maxi Award finalist, New Mexico Presswoman's Z Award place, but second runner-up, right?
Second runner-up.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. I seem to be I was second runner-up in the Miss Farmington pageant in 1974.
There you go. There's some poetic justice there, you know, since the award was given to you in Farmington, you know?
Exactly. So it really made me smile. That's perfect. It's just perfect.
Right. It is. What is the Maxi Award?
The Maxi Award. So it's a relatively new literary competition that was given in honor of a little girl that was born with lysencephaly. It's a severe developmental disability and congenital brain disorder. It's caused by a virus during what was happening during in utero development. And she was still alive, but she couldn't talk and she couldn't eat or see, and she required 24-hour care. And she passed away in 2014, shortly after her sixth birthday.
Mm.
I believe it was her parents that set this up. It says the Maxi Awards are designed to not only support writing and reading, but also to help those who may not have been fortunate enough to hold a book in their hands.
Aww.
So, yeah.
That's great.
It was an honor to be a finalist in that. And that was in 2021 for the... And they are currently doing their 2022 awards.
Oh, that's great. Well, congratulations on that. That's an honor.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you have a website, Mickey with IRPettit.com. Very nicely done. I love that. Did you design the cover?
Oh, the cover.
It's great.
Thank you. Uh-huh. It's actually, my husband and I figured out what I wanted it to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And then the person who did this is my niece. Her name is Kate Jones.
Yeah.
She's an artist and a singer as well, lives mm-hmm. in New York. And I told her what I wanted, and that I wanted a tree that the leaves coming off of the tree would be lit.
Right.
And so I explained what I wanted, and she came back and she said, "You mean all a man ray?" And she showed me a picture of man ray, that a photograph of these leaves, and I said, "Exactly like that."
Perfect.
And so she did the cover, and then she did two versions of it. We angled the fence a little bit more, and I just love it. I'm very pleased with it. I wanted it to be a watercolor.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like a photograph, you know, we could have gone with a photograph or a cover.
Right.
But I wanted a watercolor.
Mm-hmm.
And the lips are so subtle in it. Because she had asked,
right.
her first question was, do you want the lips to be like a smack, you know, like just
right.
lips? And I said, no. And so I had no idea who Man Ray was. She was the one who found that.
Ah.
People look at that cover and they don't see the lips until you point it out.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I saw the lips.
That's all I see.
Yeah, I see the lips right away because of a kiss, but they are subtle, you know.
They're very subtle, yeah.
Yeah, it's great, you know, and it captures Wyoming and the fields and the... Oh, it's just a very well-done cover. I was impressed with that.
Thank you.
You bet.
My husband thought we should have horses in there, and I said no.
No. They're just off to the right off to the side there, I'm sure.
Yeah, a little off to the side, free horses, but
right.
We nixed the horses, but but yes, it is very Wyoming. Thank you so much for this and this opportunity to speak again in Farmington.
Oh, you bet.
It's been a long time since I've lived there, and I'll probably be going back for my 50th class reunion.
All right.
Which will be in, it'll be 2024. That's not that far away.
No, it's not.
So thank you.
And thank you, and let us know when the next book comes out, and we'll talk again.
Will do.
All right. Thanks.
You know, because I think I had asked you, what bookstores should I go to?
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm.
And I had her name down, but I think you had said to go there.
Yeah.
I think I got that information from you.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
I went there right after that luncheon.
Oh, good.
And as I was leaving, the other woman, Kathleen Rogers, was driving away. She was the first runner-up.
Right. Oh, that's perfect. Just perfect.
You know what? I think the person that was the woman that won, and I can't remember her name off
Lynn
the top of
Hinton.
My head. I think she had been there too.
She probably
because they looked at me when I went in and said, and they went, "What's the deal with this?" And I laughed. Well, it stands to reason I'd be the last one there.
Oh, that is too funny. That's a story right there.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Well, you know, this was just a treat.
It was for me, too.
No, you're a very good interviewer.
Oh, thank you.
And very relaxing.
Well, I just like to talk about books, so hey. And that was Mickey Pettit talking about her book, A Kiss for Maggie Moore. And we have found out that Mickey was second runner-up for Miss Farmington when she went to high school here. This is Tracy Hales with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico, and 103.3 Durango, Colorado.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.